This week's episode is another spin with the brilliant and creative Michael Dunworth, who was on our show last November and joins us again for a conversation about Bitcoin as a cheat code for solving the world's problems of money. I'm Scott Deedles. I'm the CEO and founder of Block Rewards, and part of our mission in bringing Bitcoin to the workplace is helping people understand how we'll help them. If you're interested for a wild ride around how Bitcoin recruits the world, solves all its problems, and a handful of other left turns, stick around. This one was a ton of fun. Special disclaimer for this week's episode: it does feature what could be described as colorful language. And so if you're someone who likes to listen to The Block Reward with your kids sitting in the backseat of your car or in a public space, you may want to save this episode for a time where you are on your own. Hope that doesn't dissuade you from checking out what is otherwise a scintillating dive into all things Bitcoin. Thanks again for tuning in. All right. Welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. For the first time, a return guest. And couldn't be happier about it. Michael Dunworth, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
So it's been a year. It's been just about exactly a year since you were here last time.
Yeah. It's good to be back. Sorry it took me so long to come back. I couldn't find it. I couldn't find the address. No, I'm joking. Dude, what a massive year it's been for Bitcoin, though. Just did everything, right? Like, we've had BlackRock start getting amongst it. We've now got, you know, a month and a half away from Microsoft, which is a $3 trillion company, voting on whether or not they should put some corn on their board, or being corn on their balance sheet. And it's like, it's crazy. Like, you'd have to pinch yourself. And I mean, we're coming up to the election now, and it feels like, given this is the biggest election year in history, with more people voting than ever, I think it's like 2.6 billion humans will have to vote this year at some point. So it is really this huge changing of the guard, it feels like. But it feels like this Bitcoin spring of action that's been coiled really tightly all year. And I'm not just talking about price action. I'm talking about everything action. But the way that politics works, a lot of people are waiting to see, you know, what's going to happen. And then they're going to make their decision. You know, it's sort of like in your life, you don't make big life choices when you're in the middle of topsy-turvy shit. You know, you're not going to go get a mortgage when you're in the middle of, I don't know, you know, three family members dying and you're going through a divorce. It's probably not the right frame of reference to make strong decisions. So I reckon we're seeing a lot of that on the sidelines. And that can be as far as, you know, not just like Bitcoin and BlackRock and buying back, but this is like energy relationships, energy grid relationships, you know, the incentive that these grids have to want to get people involved that are from the mining industry. I got really lucky to hear a conference. I was just at the Chico conference in Sydney, and it was awesome. And I got to watch this panel on hash rate, and it talked about Iris Energy with them and their hash rate from last, like basically Texas was paying them to mine Bitcoin. So they were getting $28,000 incentive because they're paying like less kilowatt hours or whatever because the grid needs them to balance it out or whatever. So I'm like, holy smokes. And more of that is to come once grids start getting on with it, once it feels less taboo. And I think based on politics, that taboo factor is going to subside. You know, like, I think that's probably coming down the pipe, you know, so that's exciting, right?
Yeah, there have been some wild announcements. I mean, the election will have occurred by the time this airs. But just yesterday, Trump was talking about ending taxation on crypto payments in the U.S., which would be on its own just something like, yeah, shockwaves. The other thing that just was announced earlier today is MicroStrategy has a three-year plan to buy $42 billion of Bitcoin.
Fucking hell, got to catch them all, man. Michael Saylor is like Ash from Pokemon. He's like a Pokemon trainer. He's catching them all, you know? He's like, but you've got literally, they're starting to feel like that. And he's sending a message, and it's a pretty clear message for any other publicly traded company. I mean, at this point, as soon as more people start getting on board with this, you're going to see, like, the amount of, like, people are going to get sued for not doing it because it's so fiscally irresponsible. Like, it's almost, we're almost at that point. And if there was probably 10 or 20 other companies doing it, retail could start suing the companies that aren't doing it. Because it's literally like, what are you doing? It's 15 years of up only. What do you want, 25 years before you're going to do it? Like, you catch the bar. Like, the iceberg is coming. I don't know what more you want. It's slamming into the boat right now. Oh, well, we'll wait. We'll play the wait and see approach. Wait and see is going to kill you. That's what happens to a lot of people when shit's going bad. They wait and see. Ugh. Yeah. I don't want to be around that. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, this is like the thing with Microsoft. They're just going to actually debate it, and it's amazing to me. You know, Saylor has been running a masterclass on executive leadership for the last 4 years. And it's not like he's been private about it. Like, the guy is on all of the TV stations, and not one other leader has emulated it in the U.S.
Isn't that fascinating, though? I wonder what it is, because there must be something. There's such a deeper philosophical element to all this, where it's, you introduce the essence of ego, pride, you know, all these kind of things, because Saylor is literally, it's not like if I'm going to school and I see some dude that gets 100% on every test and he's the smartest kid in the class, I'm going to be like, oh, my job's to do well in school too. Hey man, wait, I know I'm going to sound like a punish, but can I borrow you for like an hour or 2 hours tops? And I just need a brain download. That's how you improve. Like, what fucking morons, pardon my language, what morons are running these companies that they go, nah, it's better than NVIDIA, and NVIDIA is what everyone wants, and we can do it too. Nah, we know better. They're not even like the, what I'm just starting to realize is that so few people actually are good at their job. And that's because so few people do what they actually like doing. So most of these CEOs and execs and stuff, they're getting paid, but no one likes what they do. And I don't blame them, because most of the shit people do is not as redundant and unpurposeful. So it doesn't feel good. So there's not that carrot to drive people. Now, MicroStrategy had a bit more of a carrot because they were a bit more of a small fish in a big pond, and they had to figure out a way to become a big fish. And like everyone says, even on our level at retail, like, Bitcoin is the cheat code. If it makes your life easier as an individual, it will make your corporation easier as a company. It will make your governance easier as a government. It's a cheat code. And because humans are the tip-top decision maker of every category, so in retail, the human is the decision maker. In corporate, the human is the decision maker. In the government, the decision is the human maker. Which means if something adds value to a human at the human level, it will transcend to every other level, meaning corporate, government. So the clue, the retail, us, we are the guinea pigs. Like, it's like, trust me, dude, every person that touches this asset starts, their life just magically starts going well. It's weird. Like, shit goes well. I'm not saying my life's perfect. I don't say your life's perfect. But I tell you what, a lot of the mental just gymnastics goes out the window, I think. I definitely feel like for me it has. I've gotten a bit more clarity on what shit to bother dignifying with my thoughts and what shit to be like, eh, fuck off, you're useless. You're part of the old bullshit system or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, when you realize how much of what we do is just a result of the convoluted nature of having to figure out the impossible problem of melting money. Like, there is no answer to that other than Bitcoin.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, and like, I said this the other day to someone, but I was like, dude, I don't know what you want, like what your goal is, but if your goal is to make money, be fucking lazy and buy Bitcoin. It's the laziest fast track ever. But with the laziness comes this discipline. Like, it's like almost like you need to be physically lazy, but mentally not lazy. Instead, with fiat, it's like you've got to be physically active, but mentally lazy. It's like almost this kind of, the scales just wobbled, and we're so used to having to sweat and die and just, it's like if we're not stressed and rushed, annoyed at what we're doing, it's like we're not working. So with Bitcoin, it's like you're happy and stuff. It almost feels like I should be doing more or something. Like, you know, you kind of feel like, hang on, am I doing nothing with my life? It's like, no, you're mentally doing something. Maybe you're physically not doing as much, but mentally you're doing. I don't know. It's sort of like Bitcoin feels like sharpening the mental work you do is kind of like Abraham Lincoln or George Washington who talked about I'll sharpen the axe for 5 hours to cut the tree down. In 6 hours, I'll spend 5 hours, you know, studying and sharpening the axe. It's kind of like Bitcoin. You spent most of your time up here, not physically, you know, putting the shovel in the ground, digging out the coins. It's not like that. It's more like the amount of cerebral just rabbit holing you've got to do with yourself to kind of get to this point where you can peek over the hedge and say, holy shit, those guys are having fun in that world of Bitcoin. Maybe it's not going to kill me to, you know, get in Molested or get some portion of allocation. It's like that. And, you know, the more you see, the more you think, the more it just doubles down and reinforces it. Like the picking Bitcoin, let's say you chose Bitcoin as a, you know, as an industry or a community like 5 or 6 years ago. Tell you what, whether it's financially, philosophically, emotionally, you've made a fantastic bet, like in every direction. And I don't know how many people could say that it's been a bad bet over a 4 or 5 year term. Even if they're not up financially, I think the amount they would have learned or even revealed about their own selves or about the world, it was worth it almost. Like, I don't think there's been someone that's been in Bitcoin for 4+ years and said, you know what, it just wasn't for me.
Yeah, and nobody who's been in for 4 years leaves.
There's no survivors. No one survives Bitcoin, you know?
There's no attrition. People don't stop understanding Bitcoin or decide like, yeah, I'm going to do something else now with my money. Now that I've been doing nothing.
No, I learned all about it, but I'm really liking the bonds. It's sort of like you can't unsee it, you know?
Which makes me wonder, you know, like I have this idea about the 100 monkeys theory and Bitcoin where essentially once enough people have understood it, it won't matter if people understand it or not. And I get that people have probably said this time around is going to be the time. They say it every time. And a friend of mine who was in 2012, they thought when it didn't happen in 2012, like that was a sign it wasn't going to happen. But like, surely we've got more than one country. Bhutan went public about its mining. There's lots of countries announcing state-sponsored mining operations now. As your point about the grid, like, I mean, and there's large companies that exist outside of the U.S. too, which I mean, everybody's focusing on the Fortune 500.
Of course. And, you know, people are sleeping on a lot of stuff. But yeah, like you mentioned, you know, these countries. But, you know, go back 3 years ago, Iran, like they were like, Iran was like, nah, no Bitcoin exchanges in our country. But you can mine, but we're the only buyers. And it's like, imagine that. What a brilliant thing, though. If you're the central bank and this new brilliant super commodity comes out and you go, get fucked, you're not having it. We're having it all. Iran, at this point, Iran had like 5 or 4 to 6% of their hash rate, which meant they're DCAing. If they're the buyer at first resort, they're DCAing the entire supply, 5% of the supply daily. Like that, you know, if you're buying your 10 bucks a day or your $5 a day, they're doing, you know, big honking numbers. But that's a really elegant system. I mean, if I'm in a country and they've got a government and the government's in debt, if I'm the government, that's the best play ever because it's like, all right, cool. Secure the energy here. You guys mine this super asset. We'll pay you for your time. You do whatever you want with the money. We're paying you, so you're happy. We're happy because we're accumulating assets. Like China's just been spending the past 15 years accumulating commodities. Like they're not rushing to buy bonds and all that shit. They've been sweeping up iron ore from all these countries and all these, like, look at the cobalt in Africa, iron ore in Australia. They've been stockpiling this stuff because they realize, oh, this whole money game's garbage. Like it's trash. Like that's why their currency's trash. They're like, whatever. That's not even the yardstick anymore because it's so comical. Right. And so now everyone is kind of cottoning on like, oh, okay, this money game's actually just been bull, sort of like hot air. We need to actually get serious about having wealth and storing wealth. And so commodities and valuable shit has become surprisingly valuable again. And Bitcoin's the king of the castle with that. So, you know, the first countries, and just like you've got friends, right? You'll see friends that become, they weren't well off and they were very successful now from Bitcoin or vice versa. You'll have friends that were very successful somewhere else. But now, you know, Bitcoin's surpassing their success. You know, you got traders that might be bond traders or hedge fund traders or whatever, making 15% a year, 17% a year, thinking they're killing it. And they're fantastic at their job. I buy Bitcoin and sit on my thumb and I smoke. And you can sell me anyway. I'm lazy. Sell me like a lazy person. There's not going to be too many value adds that you can tell me that I should go into the work, suit, office, trading, win, lose, stress, relationship stress, late nights, early mornings, all that shit. I'm done. Like, my life's too busy. Like all the shit is already shit enough. I don't need more headaches. You know what I mean? I've got to check how many ingredients are in this food because it's got seed oils. It's got this. The sun's trying to kill me. The vegetable pesticides are trying to kill me. Why the fuck do I want to add stress? I'm trying to figure out how to become a hedge fund trader to beat the inflation that's melting my ice pot, like my bowl of ice in the back room. Like I'm telling you, I'm not the norm, but laziness is inherent in a lot of people. And I'm pretty sure people's batteries are running on less and less and less. And the lazier we get, the more appealing Bitcoin becomes. So that's a great thing.
I mean, and truly, the average person has no desire to be a hedge fund manager.
None. None. And they literally need to be now. If inflation's at 10 to 12%, call it 7. Call it 7 and be the nicest guy in the world. If it's 7%, you need to make 7%. How? And then so what happens? You see this divergence between discipline and moonshotters. So the people that are disciplined are like, fuck, I'm just going to grind. I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to stick to my process. And over time, it should work out. Then you have these moonshotters that are going to go bust or boom. And that's like they've pumped it all into dog coins or shit coins or whatever. And they're just trying to survive to try and get their head above water almost. And it forces this gambling mentality in us because we have to chase. We're chasing playing catch up every year, right? By 7% or 12% or 15%. When you're playing catch up, like stress is not good for us. I don't know who said this, but like it fucking kills us. Like literally, it's a cancer production thing. Like the stress, when you're stressed, your body is trying to survive. Like if you're stressed all day, I'm pretty sure humans are meant to live to like 360, but we've just figured out a way to kill ourselves by 40, 60, 80, and 100. And I'm pretty sure stress is big in that department. But yeah, life's hard for, you know, a lot of people right now, and it's not getting any easier. The worse the money, the worse the life. And that's a very easy thing because money is a dependency, almost a dependency. It's an artificial dependency. We have dependencies, food, water, shelter. Those are baked in. Like if we're a software program, that's baked in. I need that. Now, money is this weird one that kind of got written into the code accidentally where it's like, oh, you need this thing called money. What is it? Is it natural? Am I born with it? No. It's completely made up for the place you're going to. And I have to have it? Yeah, you need it like oxygen. And if you don't have it, you'll die. And depending on how much you have, will depend on how your life is. It's like the same thing. Oxygen, if we were on a planet that had a much higher oxygen concentration, here's an interesting thing. We had a planet that had, let's say, 95% oxygen. I could run for 9 hours and not get tired because the muscles cannot like basically get tired because they're getting pumped with too much oxygen. And we'd be delirious. We'd walk around all happy and weird. That's the same thing. Money is just the same. You got lots of money, you got less money. It'll show you how long you can go on a plane or how short you can go. But, you know, it's all the same stuff, these dependencies. And so now with money, the previous money is not really the neutral money that everyone should get out of the box because it's sort of got these preconceived rules and, you know, favors baked into it. But now with a cleaner money that's sort of like a fresh start, it kind of gives everyone a chance to read the rule book, choose whether to play the game or not, and participate. And participate at your own pace because it isn't at the moon yet. And by scientifically, if it was like a mass puzzle, we'd say that this money would go up forever. Like the series would never, you know, infinitely diverge. It just keeps going up and up and up because the money is going to keep going down and down and down. And so if that's the case, then everyone can participate at their own pace because we all know where the destination is. And plus the predictability, you know, risk and predictability, there's two levers. You swap them out. High risk, low predictability. I change it. High predictability, low risk. Now, Bitcoin is the most predictable money. Now, we don't even know what life looks like when you can forecast your money. So, and what I mean by that is imagine how much different your life choices would be if you had a Rolodex of how much money you're going to have at the end of your life, and you could start spending that now and kind of like thinking backward. We plan our lives now. We can plan, but you can't plan if you're like, oh, I don't know, mate, the interest rates are coming. Oh, I don't know if I can do the holiday with you, man. Sorry. So you can't do the holiday. So now the kids don't get to go camping or whatever with the other kids and play in the creek and make memories. I'm telling you, it's very insidious, but we can't see it from in, but the next generations will look back at our generation, probably be like, man, like we think we've got it beautifully because we're not at war. And that's true. We are very fortunate, but there's going to be a lot of more fortunate things to come that people will look back and say, man, they'll play on expert mode. And money is this weird expert mode. It's like, dude, we're playing on expert mode. And Bitcoin makes like the cheat code. It's like, oh, you're playing, you still play it. Dude, you know, no one can beat it on expert. It's impossible. Nintendo released the thing saying they can't, they made it impossible. It's like, but if you put in the code Bitcoin, it will make it all easy. It's like, oh, really? And Nintendo even said it's a cheat code. Like Nintendo baked it into the code. It's like, that's life. Like literally, if it's a video game, the closest thing to a cheat code I've ever seen is Bitcoin. Unbelievable. Yeah. How lucky are we that we get to be in, we're balls deep in it, in the middle of it, like in the start, the genesis of this flower growing, you know? How cool.
Yeah, it's an incredible time to be alive. We always talk about it's a once in a species event. And for, you know, somebody said earlier about the urge for people to want Bitcoiners to be wrong. You know, this thing, there absolutely is a limiting factor for new entrants in the pride piece.
It's a thing like, oh, why haven't you put it on there? Do you not like return on investment? So there is two sides to it, right? But, you know, talking like, let's say I've spoken to, you know, old successful people, they might be 60, 70, that made their money in, let's say, TV or carpets or some, I don't know, some random industry. And you go, oh, Bitcoin's the best thing. They're like, and it's sort of a meh. But they're not the audience. They, like, when you look at someone, think about things that you know you're good at. And eventually, as you start accumulating that, as you get older, you start sticking to what you know, in a way. Like, you just go, well, I know what I don't know, and I know what I know. And so I don't really judge a lot of these very old, successful people that are saying, well, it's not my thing. You know, I don't know tech. And I get that. And I'm like, you know, your incentive to learn is not as big, right? Because they're like, well, I'm figuring it out and I've got 15 years left. And if it all goes to shit, how bad could it go in 15 years? Blah, blah, blah. You know, they're at the tail end. You know, you look at 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds now, they're looking for that cheat code. That dude, I'm like on my hands and knees with my hat in my hand for a hint. How can I help maybe get ahead of people? You know? And that different dynamic is so interesting because I see all these old people like, well, how stupid are these guys? They don't even get it. It's like, they don't need to get it. Like, they're 1 minute to midnight. You know, they're already planning their retirement. They're already in retirement. They're like looking at coffins and shit to buy. They can be wrong and they don't give a fuck as 8 years. Now, their kids or whatever, their kids are meant to inherit money that's now, you know, a burning pile of cash or something or whatever, then that's obviously a problem. But, you know, you get this, it's just such an interesting dynamic. But a lot of the times, it's either going to be just, you know, saying no to stuff out of, you know, the way that they've operated and got themselves to a successful position that's got them there. And then there's other people that are, it's almost like because Saylor has been so outspoken about it and so in your face about it, people are now too, it's so obviously, I don't want to be the first to come forward as, yeah, show me how to print money. Okay, come on. Yeah, I get it. You're right. It's very hard because especially when these guys are CEOs, if they make that decision after ignoring that decision, there's going to be some judgment on what that opportunity cost from that decision maker CEO. So if I'm the CEO of a company and I just missed some opportunity for 2-3 years in a row, and now four of our competitors have capitalized on it, and I've been the single person that's basically said, nah, it's not for us, here's why, I can probably assume I'm going to be out of a job. And that's because I'm what would be called a peacetime CEO, where it's peace, it's good, harmonic, keep things on. But as shit starts hitting the fan, inflation's good, supply chains are getting cooked, people are going to need to figure out a way to preserve their wealth. And that's when you get a wartime CEO to come in, shake the tree, cut the staff, fix up the balance sheet, fix up the store of value, and then move on. But that dynamic, I think, is a thing where there would be, because remember, a lot of these publicly traded companies, most of the times when the CEO speaks, he's not speaking. It's an architected speech, right? So there's this element of puppeteering around it where, you know, they might be like, oh, Bitcoin's mad, but they might have some big bank that's got them a huge line of credit for their working capital supply chain that says, if you do that shit, we're cutting it out because we don't have that product. Well, so there is more things than common sense because unfortunately at this game, at this level, like where you're at that level of publicly traded company, you're not the one calling the shots. There's an architecture of people around you that say what you can and can't do. And usually that's where people have got legacy relationships that are pulling them away from new opportunities. So we signed a 5-year deal with these guys. They're going to cut our banking if we start touching Bitcoin. And it's all, it doesn't have to be rational. It doesn't have to make sense. It just is what it is. You know, it's like, and there's more common sense answers because, yeah, if I'm a publicly traded company CEO and I'm looking at this dude that's just outperformed everyone, including NVIDIA, that has made the breakthrough invention of our lifetime, apparently, right? I'm going to start thinking it's my time to start stepping up. And you know what? If there's any CEOs listening to this, pull the fucking trigger, pull your thumb out of your ass and do it. And I'll tell you why. You will be the best CEO they've ever had because you will increase the performance by more than you could ever imagine and with the lowest cost ever. It is the pound for pound biggest impact you can make.
Yeah, the thing about, you know, this cheat code idea makes me, you know, with Saylor, he's actually taken the cheat code to another, he's got the infinite money cheat code where he is issuing paper debt. He's borrowing money for nothing, selling that debt and using that debt to buy more Bitcoin. And it's the craziest. Yeah, it's crazy.
Or something I can make more, like take something I can make more of, buy something I can't buy, can't make more of. And like, and you see like the idiocracy of like central banks that confiscate Bitcoin. I don't know if they get it, but Bitcoin is so transcendental that it doesn't matter what policy or what setups you have in place to survive a post-Bitcoin world, it is not going to work. It is Bitcoin or nothing. And I mean that, Lord, in a, like, I don't care. I'm happy to be wrong. It might be Zipcoin. I don't know. But right now, nothing looks like anything compares to Bitcoin. So no matter, and it is so powerful because remember, Bitcoin is money. Money is powerful, not Bitcoin. And money is power. So if you are the new money, you are the new sheriff in town, which means all the people that you've paid in the right directions to keep things going or whatever it is, they will have a new carrot. And that carrot is Bitcoin. So if you're not paying them in Bitcoin and your life in whatever the shadow relationships that you set up in business or whatever, you know, like if they're the dodgy guys, if they're not getting paid in Bitcoin, they're not going to do dodgy stuff. So basically, even if you're on the dodgy side of stuff, let's say you're whatever, because it's the best money. I don't want your paper money. What do I want monopoly money for? Like, it's like, it doesn't make sense. So no matter what you side, the good guys, the bad guys, everyone wants the best money. That's why when you go to sell shit, right? Like, so let's say you had a, you know, a health issue or something came up. Like the other day I had to sell some stuff and I was like, fuck, I'm selling Bitcoin. That's the last on the pile to go. You know, kind of like, you sort of like, let's say someone goes, oh yeah, that's $25. You're going to be like, oh fuck. I don't want to break this 50 or 20, you know, you're like, oh, and you get all the coins and you know, you pay a parking fine. And you see those videos in Australia, guys do this. They go pay their parking fines with 1 cent, 5 cent coins, like piles of them. They go, sorry, this is legal tender. They tip it on. They're like, thanks. This is my $72. It looks like a kilo of fucking coin. But like, you will always use the shitty stuff to get rid of it first. Like, yeah, I'd take the coins and the shrapnel. I don't want that because you don't want it back. So if I'm going to pile up all these coins to give to someone, same way with shitty money. It's like, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to sell my Bitcoin, but maybe I could sell my car and go downsize my car. I don't need that. Yeah, you know, I don't need my surfboard anymore because I don't serve. I live in the country now, whatever it is. Like, you start finding ways to not sell the valuable thing. But in the process of that, it makes you internally accidentally define what the valuable thing is to you. And usually it means that Bitcoin's the last cab off the rank. So the priority of things you want to sell if you had an urgent bill is sort of the priority of assets in your book in a way, which is sort of like, yeah, I don't know. It's weird to think about, but it's sort of like we're all reading. Here's what's weird. We're all reading the same book. Like, you know, someone that's been in Bitcoin, if they get in 1 year, their story arc is going to be very similar to your arc or my arc where they go, oh yeah, but maybe we could have bigger blocks and then everyone, and you go, okay, so now I got there. I thought this had been stupid years. Why not? And you always go through the same motion. Oh, this would be bad if I could have it on a debit card. It's like, yeah, but then you don't want to spend all this and that lightning. You got all these kind of same things pop up the same way, whether you're Elon Musk or your Fred Smith, everyone is reading the same book and almost interpreting it with the same errors because of the same preconceived notion. And it's almost like we realize how similar we all are. When we do have a common money, we realize, oh my God, all the problems with it that I originally thought, you thought the same thing, and there's a rebuttal to it. That's really interesting. What else is there a problem? I thought this. Yeah, there's a rebuttal to that. Oh my God, what else haven't you guys thought of? Hey, we've been here for 15 years trying to make it a thing. We've been thinking about it. Yeah, exactly. We haven't been doing nothing. We haven't been doing everything, but we haven't been doing nothing. So we've got some answers to some of the questions, you know? Or, you know, it's like battered wife syndrome. Like, you go to see all these dudes and like black eyes and beaten up and you walk, you're like, yeah. So Bitcoin guys, how is it? Like, it's awesome. The lightning's wearing the soldier. Is this how it feels like, dude?
It's not all fun and games. That's
oh man, just some of those, you know. It's like, you know, it's like it's very cyclical and farming like or something, you know, like hibernation, because it has the cycles of Bitcoin is so interesting because you've got like 4 years. So you've got this 18 month period every 4 years to make hay while the sun shines. So the exchanges out of 4 years, they make probably, you know, 50 or 60% of their revenue in that 18 months. And it's just fascinating how we're so used to controlling everything. like being like, oh, well, what's it doing this quarter? Well, let's move it. Let's advertise to promote our product. Like, no. This thing is like a heartbeat. You observe it and it operates, or you operate around it, not the other way around. You can try and impose your will on it. No one's been able to change it in 15 years. So it's sort of like, it's literally like the most stubborn human we could invent. Imagine the most stubborn human we could invent. That's basically the perfect person to protect your money, though, right? Like, if you had someone that had to, he could not be negotiated with, and you're like, hey, whatever you do, don't let anyone print more money. It's like, yes, boss. It's like, hey, people are fucking printing all the time. So we get a new guy that's really stubborn, and he's like, I'm not changing. You cannot print. And that's basically what Bitcoin is. He's like, finger up the thing. Don't touch that fuck. Done. Now he's like the best card dog ever, you know? Like, and it's like, it's just interesting because it's against our will. Usually we're trained as people now in this world where it's like, we're so empowered to be able to do things. Yeah, you can start a business off your phone. You can do this, cool. And so that's trained us to be like, yeah, well, you know, things become malleable and ephemeral in that fiat world. But now it's like with Bitcoin, everyone goes to try and like give their 2 cents, and it just backhands them back to the Stone Age. Elon Musk, richest guy in the world, one of the smartest people in the world, sending people to Mars, literally. Like, he goes, ah, yeah, it's good, but, and then he's like, everyone's just like, like, hey, easy boy. You know, like, guard dog, where's my guard dog? There he is. He's sleeping. Anyway, he looks like a polar bear. He literally is like a polar bear. Yeah, so anyway.
Yeah, it's a metronome. Cool,
you know? Look at this. Look what I got at the conference.
Oh, very nice.
It's a BitAx. It's one of those. It's one of the miners. 750 giga hash. How cool is this? Moore's Law in a box. That is the entire Bitcoin network in 2011. Every miner, every GPU at someone's home, everything in there. Isn't that crazy? Like, how good are people? Like, I've got no clue what the fuck, how any of this shit works, but it's like, isn't that incredible that someone has figured out how to cram it all down to that? Like, these are people that we're working with in Bitcoin. Isn't that incredible? Like, these are the people that are, like, they're on your team. I'm like, oh, mad. Thanks, guys. And this is sick. And I bought this off someone online here. You know, you do the whole thing and it's just really cool. Anyway.
Yeah, Bitcoin's power as a recruiting tool is something else. It's like there are no barriers for entry. It makes more sense to join than to fight it. And it's the metronome that's going to pump along at its own pace, regardless of what you decide to do. So at some point, it's almost like it just probably will just exhaust everyone who's being so, the holdouts, the end holdouts in the end, we'll just have to admit that.
Yeah, it's like trying to win a staring contest against the sun. Like, it's going to keep looking back at you. Like, it will win. We're human, we're flesh and blood. We're not meant to fight those sort of fights. We've got different fights. We've got a different purpose, you know? And like, I look at the most illuminating thing I said to someone that they said that made it resonate. I go, mate, Bitcoin is a Medusa asset. It's like, once you look at it, every other asset will turn to stone, like just rocks, pet rocks, you know, and whatever it is. Like, it will capture your entire soul and it will hypnotize you. Because if you tell me to go buy something, it's like, it better be a better investment than Bitcoin. And when they say that, it's got a better return than Bitcoin. Cool. Do I have to do as much work? Oh, all you got to do is do this and jump over there and sign this and bounce here and call this and Zoom meeting that. It's like, bro, yuck. Like, yuck. Just yuck. Busy. Yuck. My brain's already busy enough with bullshit. Like, I don't need more bullshit, you know? So the opportunity comes. Bitcoin is teaching us that wealth, I don't think wealth looks like the dollars in your bank account. Wealth looks like how many slots on your calendar do you control? You know, and that's sort of, now Bitcoin sort of answers the wealth question because it sort of deterministically says it should work and you will be wealthy in the future if you start accumulating some of this thing that keeps going up forever.
This is that thing, you know, I think it's an interesting concept about Bitcoin. You know, like, so I have this money is the, you know, money that works well is the ability to plan for the future with certainty. And part of the reason for that is good money is able to convert energy into time. Like, you can store time with good money. And so not only do you get to plan for your future, you get to preserve that time, which is the weirdest Like, you know, Bitcoin is like
it's like bottling it up, accidentally putting it in a bottle, but we don't like, it's like we're storing time, but we're not like, I know it's like you can't actually store it, but we've found a way to sort of store it in a way, like, you know?
Yeah. So that you can enjoy it in the future. And that's the crazy thing about melting money, because what it really does is it gives you no ability to store your time. And this is why everyone has less and less time all the time. And everyone's, you know, compression of attention spans and TikTok society. It's because we can't store our time.
Yeah, exactly. And what happens once we can? Like, thinking about people that have, let's say you've got a financial goal in the fiat world. People have stacking goals in the Bitcoin world, right? The cool thing about a stacking goal is I can start today and plot a course for it with reasonable certainty and have a 10-year goal and say, if I want 2 Bitcoins in 10 years, that's what my stacking goal is, how do I get there in 10 years? And you can plot it back, right? Say we hit a mill in this bull run and you can start estimating how much work you're going to have to do to accumulate that. But you can plot a course that's reasonably predictable. Now, in fiat, you don't know. There's just so many unknowns. Like, in 10 years' time, you don't know, like, what's happened in 4 years' time or 6 years' time. Since COVID, the value of house prices and stuff has gone like 60%. Like, the inflation numbers are bonkers now. So you don't really know. So now it's like you can't use any of that money to plan. $27.50 for avocado on toast. $27.50. Dude, I don't live in Rwanda. I don't live in Zimbabwe where it's like hyperinflated money. I live in Sydney, Australia. $27.50. Literally, I was like, I looked at it and I looked at the dude serving the coffee. He looked at me so like, it's not my, I didn't write that, dude. Trust me. I'm embarrassed too. I hate him and saying that's 27. Like, people like, they don't, they can't stomach being like, oh, just the muffin? Yeah, that's $16.50, thanks. And they're like, they know that they're like, dude, this is so cool. And it's like, we're all getting to that place. The world is turning into that. And so it's like, it just sort of, it forces like the word rush. Oh, hurry up, rush, right? You know, when you're rushing, how bad is it? Like, oh, this is running late. And then you get a red light. So, like that feeling in your soul. That's what.
And this is when you make bad decisions. Everybody exactly. Rushing makes bad decisions.
100%. And so if I know my money is melting by 12%, but I've got to do something, I'm going to make probably bad decisions because I can't stop and clear the noise and focus on the signal. And this is what this other world is just full of. It's just, it's literally like, it literally, if you think of that great article called Everyone's a Scammer or something, it's a Bitcoin article. It's brilliant. It basically says everyone's trying to take something. You people in a way. And it's like when you look at everyone is trying to take your attention in the fiat, everything. Look at me, look at us, look at us. Noise. 3,000 directions, I'm going nowhere. Like you go nowhere fast when you've got a million choices. It's like, you know, the rich person asks for 50 things and the sick person asks for one. You know, when we are smothered with noise, we get discombobulated about all the things we really want because we don't have a sort of sense of truth because there's so many things saying, oh, maybe I do want that. Maybe. But at the end of the day, the core thing we want based on sick people that are dying is to get healthy, like to be healthy. And all these problems that we have, they're all luxury problems that we've graduated to, right? You know, if health isn't our issue, it's like, oh, you know, I'm not tall enough or that girl's better looking than me. Or I'm not a girl, but you know what I mean? Like that people have these insecurities that we develop because we're not insecure about a wolf coming to my camp and eating me. Like I'm not worried about that. I don't think that's going to happen. So I find new shit to worry about, right? And that's how we develop all this, you know, worry and rushing and stuff like that. But yeah, I just think people's minds, like if I thought of like, if I was like, imagine you're the CEO of humanity, right? And you got 8 billion cats that work for you. Man, I'd be looking at it like, oi, bro, give them a break, man. Fuck me. Like, slow down, dude. Like, they're still working 40-hour weeks. Technology has allowed a much greater output in 40 hours per person. So they're just doing more now. Like, they're not actually.
We should all be living like kings.
We should all be living like kings. All of it. It's all, but everyone should be. It's doable. The weird thing is we think there's this arbitrary hate between us. It's like we're all on the fucking same team. I'm stuck on this planet with you. You're stuck on this planet with me. It's way better if I'm living with someone, let's say I'm living in a house that's this magical apartment that has 8 billion people in it, it's probably not best to go shit in my neighbor's apartment and tell him I shat in there. Like, he's obviously going to come back to me, or it's going to make someone else shit in someone else's apartment and condone the behavior. That's what we're doing on Earth. It's like, oh, we're bombing them and they're bombing them and they're shitting on them. It's like, cool. You guys call yourself intelligent. If an alien species, why the fuck aliens don't talk to us? Because how fucking stupid must we be to shit in our own backyard? So, yeah, I get it. I get it. And I hope they leave us for dead. We're fucking useless to them. Like, do you know what I mean? And like, imagine that, not knowing a single other person and being stuck on an island, not knowing a single other person in the ocean that exists. And then being like, looking to the one dude on the other island, being like, we're stuck here. Yeah. Hey, fuck you. Like, why? Dude, it's like, imagine watching a movie like that. You wouldn't even, but you'd ask for a refund and then the director would never get another job in Hollywood because it's the stupidest thing anyone's ever seen. And then we'd be watching it saying, that's so stupid. And then we'd go be like, can you believe they voted for Trump or whatever? It's like, just lobotomize me by fucking, you know, put the needle in, fentanyl me up. Okay, cool. Bye-bye. I'm out of this world. You know what I mean? And it gets to a point where we've got to have a hard conversation with ourselves. And like, I mean this really pretty seriously. Like, you can't bomb other countries forever. That doesn't happen. Not in the world that I grew up, not in any architecture of narrative that I know. Like, and history doesn't think, like, history's not going to leave it alone. Like, you know, Germany has hard problems right now because of their history. People in Germany have hard problems because of their history. Time doesn't forget. It's a very cruel mistress in ways. And so, and I say I mean, myself for everyone, but you know, if you're a hero today, time wins every war. It might lose some battles, but it wins every war. And so if you're not principled, like if your motivations are not one architected around time, then you're going to be ephemeral to history. Does that make sense? So you might be the hero today. Yeah, cool. But they're not going to name a highway after you. They're not going to name a country after you or a town or a hospital. No, you're going to get, you know, they're going to, you know, some person might have graffitied your Twitter handle on a wall. You know, like there's levels to this thing, but I feel like we're kind of just all like, man, I hope that, you know, I hope I bang that chick or I hope I get the skateboard. It's like, you're this magical being of stardust that has got unique experience from go to know, the whole that no one can ever recreate. Not any person in history can ever recreate the experiences you've had. And the best value that I can get out, and you're on my team, remember, we're both humans, so we're on the same team. We've got the same CEO, same cunt that's bossing us around. We're on the same team, and I'm going to start trying to figure out what is wrong with me. I don't get that. Like, if I'm working for someone, I've got to figure out how to make my life easier. Hey, man, I don't like the cut of your shirt. What are you good at? I'll tell you what I'm good at. This is what I suck at. Is there any overlaps? Can we complement each other's skills? That's probably going to make things better for everyone. No. Let me nitpick some shit. You know what? I reckon the world's probably been led by poor leadership. Not leadership is not bad. Governance is not bad and governments are not. But if you got bad people that are bad at their job, you got to say they're bad at their job. And you know what? As a friend says you look good. A real friend says you've got spinach in your tooth. My friends, when I was the CEO of the company that I used to run, one of my best friends, he said to me when a lot of shit was going, like I was having a lot of problems dealing with some stuff. And he goes, and I was sort of like trying to like think about how to solve it. And he goes, hey, I just want to let you know, as my best mate, like, you know, good mate, he goes, you know, a fish rots from the head. And I was like, wow, that's fantastic. But I can't fix anything if I don't know that, you know? And if you're too naive to be like, if you're so frazzled or discombobulated, but that's why you need people like that. Like Marcus Aurelius or Caesar or whoever it was, one of these cats from ages ago, he would walk down the street and everyone chanting his name. And he had an employed person, only job was to say when he was walking down the street and everyone was cheering his name, he said, remember you're only human, only job that person sees. Only thing was to keep him leveled and humble with the people so that he could relate to the people. Now, even if that's an old wives' tale or whatever, that is a really powerful wives' tale because it is a thing. Everyone has their moments of oscillation up and down, the big, hit it big and then fall and stuff. But we are all human. And the more we focus on the thing we all are, the more we're going to figure out what we got in common, the more, like, if you were playing a footy team, right? Let's say you play footy and everyone fucking
hates each other and no one works together. So you shouldn't be laughing. You'd be like, this is a layup. They've already beaten themselves, right? Like half the world or not, sorry, not even half the world. Call it 90% of the world right now. Look at America. Like America was the beauty pageant, the superstar. Now, any leader in another country, they don't need to defeat America because America's defeated themselves. The infighting, it's like a football team, right? If you were going to compete against America in economics, war, or anything, you would look at them and be like, previously be like, Jesus Christ, these guys, the best military, the best money, the best technology, the best brains, the most freedom, all this stuff. Now you'd be like, man, quite literally, I don't know whether they're Arthur or Martha. Like, you know, what the fuck's going on over there? So if you're Putin, if you're Z or whoever, you're not going to be worried about that because you know that's already taken care of itself. And what the principle behind this is, whether it's a football team, whether it's governance or anything, you've always got to present a united front collective to you know, to win the battle. But if we're all not on the same team, it really does start feeling like expert mode, especially when it's optional to play against each other. It's like, I don't know, but it just feels like we need more positive. And I'm not being a hippie like, yeah, just be positive, guys. I mean, be fucking smart about it. You're going to get further if you work together. You go for it. What's the saying? If you want to go quickly, go yourself. If you want to go far, go together. And look, I'm not in a rush anywhere. We're all going to die. So we shouldn't be going anywhere quickly because we're not going to get anywhere because we're all going to die. So we want to make humanity, you know, imagine these galactic space forces around the universe that are huge, big type 3 civilizations. They got there by working together. We could do that too if we work together. But if you're trying to measure your dick against his dick when no one else in the universe has a dick, then that's going to be a fucking waste of time. Kind of thing, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? I just think we need a bit more fucking positivity in our diet. And I say this while I'm ranting, but I mean it in good spirit. I mean it in a, you know, like...
It's the nihilism. It's the nihilism that comes from not being able to imagine storing your time into the future, right? I think like if you feel on some level you have no ability to plan for the future, then you're going to get disaffected. And that's why I think like this interesting idea about like as Bitcoin appreciates, if it's appreciating your time, like what is the value of your time stored in Bitcoin in 4 years or in 12 years? Like how much time, it's not just that you're preserving it now, you're appreciating it to an unknown level. Who knows how much time your time today will be worth if you store it for 4 or 10 years?
Mental. And you know what? We could look back historically, and it's going to be crazy because we will have a data set of this, but we will see the people that stacked and we'll be able to know the stats on this was their hourly rate and they committed this many hours. And in 10 years' time, they got this many hours. Do you know what I mean? So if I work 4 hours and I DCA'd 4 hours worth of my work every week, then I can quantify how many hours work I put in and what it's worth now. And that is like, you know, it's almost like an autonomous assistant that keeps working while you go to sleep, like basic. And that's what the money, it's weird because we all think it's too good to be true because it's just a smarter version of money. We're like, well, hold on, hold on. The money always has problems. It's always got problems. It always introduces problems. It's like, no, dude, like if you eat shit food that's not good, like, if your body is allergic to nuts and you keep eating nuts, you're going to have a bad experience with nuts. But what if I told you berries exist? What? Berries? But you can't eat something. Whenever you eat something, it's always bad for you. It's like, no, dude, it's because you're fucking allergic to them. Yes, it's bad for you because you don't like nuts. But try this berry. And then berries change their life. They go, oh my God, I used to hate eating. Now I love it. That's what's going to happen with money. People have a terrible relationship with it now. And it's such a taboo topic. Because it's this golden goose that everyone gets and it creates envy or jealousy or all this stuff. So everyone's always been kind of hush hush on what their money situation might be or whatever. And that's fine, but that's a leg. Like, money shouldn't be the be all and end all. It's not the goal. Like, we're creative machines. Like, you want to measure our level of whatever, like measure the intelligence of ChatGPT and you want to watch how that story unfolds. What will unfold is ChatGPT is really smart. Of course it is. It can watch every website at once. It's going to be clever. Now, how smart can it get? Well, when it runs out of information to mine, like basically, then it needs creativity. and original thought, because ChatGPT is only clever because it's mined all these original thoughts. It doesn't get smarter by us giving it regurgitation of ChatGPT. So as we start using ChatGPT more, it will get dumber because we're giving it itself. We're sort of regurgitating the food and vomiting it back up and feeding our kid with. Like, does that mean in terms of data? Like, that's what we're doing, because it'll do more of our stuff for us, which means we'll become more dependent on it. But that infects its data set with sort of our stupidity in a way. So it's going to go from this, like, you know, very prestigious data set to starting getting muddled and murky and stuff. Like, think about this. The images on the internet used to be much more high quality because it was harder to produce an image. So when it's harder to produce something, you only do good things of it. So photography and all this stuff. But now as everyone gets a camera, it's like corner of the table, this blurry photo. So it's all that. And that mess, it gives the data set more accuracy, but it can make the data set more poison because you're trying to move away from our shitty behaviors and into this clean, new, best of the best. So anyway, so but with that, all that comes, the best thing, the best currency in the world for ChatGPT, if you want to be like, let's say people will be trying to do SEO with ChatGPT in a way, it will be to have the most original content. So if you think of ChatGPT like a big ocean of original creativity, but that comes from the brain and the mind, and that doesn't come from, you know, being stuck inside in a concrete building, you know, looking at blue lights. It comes from sun and creativity and experiences and emotions and creativity and curiosity. And a lot of that curiosity has been sort of dampened because life gets in the way. And there's this sort of, you know, that saying, life gets in the way. Oh, what happened? I wanted to be a rugby player. What happened? Oh, life got in the way. Best example I've ever seen, Susan Boyle. If you don't know who she is, she's an X Factor winner from Britain, sold millions of albums. She was like 55 or something when she went on X Factor. And, you know, as Australia's Got Talent, America's Got Talent. She goes on, sings, blows the roof out, blows everyone's minds, opera singer, right? Like opera sort of singer. Stunning voice. And the first thing everyone thinks is, why now? Where the fuck have you been? Like, you're a fucking Pavarotti. You owe us your talent. You owe Earth your entire talent. You have got such a gift. It is your responsibility to share that with everyone. So where the fuck have you been for 40 years? Like, you know, almost like pissed off that you've only just found out about it. Like, what the fuck you been doing? I've been waiting. And it's like, you know, then you hear this story. Oh, well, when I was 18, my sister got sick and then she had a baby while there. And then the sister passed away and I had to raise her and my dreams got put on hold and da-da-da. Now the kid's grown up and they're like, it's sick or whatever the backstory is. But there is a story. And it's so interesting to think about those, like what, when someone is really sharing their talent, like truly sharing their, like what they're born to do, it changes everyone. Columbus sailing across the ocean or whatever. Born to do it because he got it done. So it was obviously meant for him. And Magellan, all these cats, they all did it because they were like, fuck it, y'all, let's go. What else am I doing? I'm going to get eaten by a saber-toothed tiger or a fucking woolly mammoths or some shit. Whatever the fuck they had going on back then. But you know what I mean? Life felt short and precious. So they were, go big, go for it. And many people fucking dropped the ball along the way. It cost them their life. And that's part of their history, their spot in history books is that it cost them their life. But they only... by them doing that, it let everyone else go for broke as well. In the same way, one person runs the 4-minute mile. No one in history runs it, ever. It's impossible to know. One person do it. The placebo effect kicks in because we're all the same. If you're flesh and blood, I can do it. Like, I don't believe there's any problem that can be architected by a human that cannot be solved by you. In the same way, if some person can run a 4-minute mile, I believe that every human could, like, not every, but a large majority of trained athletes could end up achieving the same result, you know? But we need the possibility to be proven true. And then it's a floodgate. It's almost like this mental barrier that we're all scared can't be broken. But once one person does it, it's like they stand up to the problem almost. And then everyone goes, you know, well, yeah, it isn't fucking impossible. And then everyone realizes that it isn't impossible. And there's something about that. There's something about that 4-minute mile meta to all that that exists across a lot of things. And you know what? Great example. Sailor. Perfect. Sailors run a 4-minute mile.
I was just going to say, it makes me think.
Sailor's the first to run the 4-minute mile. Watch them all pile in. But no one wants to be the first to try and compete against the guy who ran the 4-minute mile. Everyone's training to figure out how they can run a 4-minute mile because they saw one guy do it. So the dudes that run a 4:03 and a 4:06 and a 4:08 or whatever, they are in the lab. And so Microsoft, NVIDIA, all these guys, they're in the lab and then watch this dude come out and hit the track. That's impossible. You can't do that. And they're proving the impossible. So let's call Saylor our 4-minute mile man.
The craziest thing about Saylor's 4-minute mile is his time will get faster forever. So he broke the 4-minute and his 4-minute will become 3 minutes.
And he's still training. Like, if you think about it, he's backed his, like, let's think about it athletically. Saylor's showed up to the track. There's been this unaccomplishable task. And he goes, you know, I'm trained. I'm pretty good. I reckon I can do this. He's trained. He got closer. He finally busted through as the leading company performance-wise in the NASDAQ or whatever, you know, on the stock market. And so he's busted through, broken all ground. Everyone's kind of looking like, oh, shit, was it a fluke? And he's like, I'm still running, guys. You can keep judging me, but I'm still cutting laps and I'm still booking wins and I'm still breaking my record. And I'm going to keep going. And now Nike's calling me to give me money. These guys are calling me to give me money. Everyone's trying to make me go faster. Are you going to catch up? And that's what it's like. Everyone is trying to figure out how to make this dude go faster because they only care about performance. They don't care what he's doing. They just know this dude performs. So they're like, how many steak sandwiches do we need to deliver? Cool. That's what makes him run fast. Fuck it. Keep running fast. We make money the faster he runs. So yeah, I mean, it's sort of 4-minute mile, man. Like, Microsoft, get your fucking running shoes on, dude. Someone in that board is going to have to do a 4-minute mile.
And the rest of us can just enjoy our $27 avocado toast and watch.
Oh, man. No, I'm making it home now. Fuck that. I'm not paying that. I'm not paying that shit. Fuck them. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, my time's worth more than that. That's, you know, I'm like, my time's not worth more than that, but it's more like, you know what? It's not so much like the dollar value. It's more like, I know that this is a rort and you know that this is a rort. I feel stupid standing here paying you for this. And you know I'm stupid paying you for it. Like, imagine someone working in a Gucci store and someone comes in and buys a $3,000 handbag that costs $88 to make. You'd be like, dude, these idiots, they just keep buying it. You'd feel ridiculous. Imagine you were selling Bitcoin, but you were selling it for $5 million and you bought them for $100,000. You'd be like, don't say it, Jack. Hi, how are you? Welcome to the Bitcoin. Yeah, we sell Bitcoin. Yeah, the price is, what did you buy? $100,000. Yeah, the price is $5 million per coin. Great, I'll have 3. They bought it. Well, fuck, I don't know. Let's open another store. Maybe people like this. They like paying overs for shit. People are stupid. That's literally with the fashion industry. It's like a complete unquantification of the value you get. Yeah, some people say it's emotional and da-da-da. No, you're wrong. That's all conditioning. There's no emotional attachment to any handbag. That's all conditioning. And it's fascinating when you go, oh, okay, cool. You realize, fuck, that got us good. Like, how well conditioned am I? Like, here's me thinking, you know what? Fuck this, you know, fuck Blue Ride. I'm going to get healthy. I'm not, no, tap water, fuck that. You know, Australia, the US and Canada are the three only countries with fluoride in the water, I think. We're the three highest with Alzheimer's and dementia. Correlated. Anyway, so you got fluoride in the water. How funny is this though? But like, you know, me feeling like, all right, I'm going to make some changes, conscious choices. I'm like, all right, fuck that. Fluoride out of my diet. So I'm like, sweet, bottled water or a tap filter. And then I'm like, yeah, okay, that's good. I had a healthy day. I'm standing in the shower, like going to bed. I'm brushing my teeth. And I'm like, I pull up like the toothpaste thing. Fuck. And you know, there's like at fluoride for cavity protection. I'm like, man, I'm in the shower standing here naked trying to brush my teeth and these guns are still feeding me fluoride. And so like you realize like it is a huge canvas of mess that this fiat system, well, I mean, you know what? That's consumerism, right? It's sort of made this consumerism look like stupidityism where it's like, how dumb are you? Just how much will you pay for something that's not worth that? You know, the avocado toast. Do they still sell it when it's $35? And what does the person that buy it look like? You look like a smart dude, stupid person, good with his money.
Probably looks a lot like you.
No, dude. You know? An idiot. Like, can I have some avocado toast, please? Yeah, sure. Just give me your bank account. set up the direct debit for 12 months. Ah, cool.
No wonder Afterpay exists. If you're going to pay $40 for fucking breakfast, you had like three installments or four installments of $10. Like, yeah, of course. Dude, people Afterpay are caught. Like, it's pretty crazy though. If like, I remember buying something and it was like, yeah, you can use Afterpay.
It's like $21 or so. It was like a pop plan or something. I was just like, what the fuck's wrong with this world? Like, you know, like when do we teach people like, nah, don't spend more than you earn, dude. It's a hole that you can't get out of. Anyway, it's interesting. You got to earn more than you spend or spend less than you earn. One or the other. You get to pick one.
Save it in a money that doesn't melt.
That's the starting point. If nothing else, just start there. Just start there. That's it. Oh, the melting money. Isn't that great? It's such a great term. I think I heard that first from Jamison Lott on a tweet. And it was like, I heard two bangers. One was like, your money is melting. And the other was, my Bitcoin exit strategy is dead. I thought that was so good. And since then, that's basically what I say to people. Because it's so true. Fucking, I'm taking these to the grave.
You know, like you try and people digging up graves and trying to pry it out of people's dead hands. Give me that USB stick. Fuck you.
Good times. It's an exciting place to be, at least. Bitcoin's a very exciting place to be. That's why I would definitely say that.
You've got a 4-minute mile, man. Sailor's just running them all day.
Yeah, it's good. He's announced he's going to be running a 4-minute mile every quarter for the next 3 years with $42 billion. Take it. Thanks, Sailor.
Mike, this has been a ton of fun.
Always a pleasure. And thank you for having me. And by the way, I mentioned before, but your book was one of the most instrumental and best time books I think I could have ever got. So thank you. And if anyone listening to this hasn't read it, it is the best intersection of sort of like enlightenment, the stuff that you'd say like hippie enlightenment, but it's not. It's all energy and cosmology and stuff. And this intersection between money and that I think is super slick. And I just wanted to commend you on that because I've had heaps of people that I've shared the book with and they all said it was a banger. I've got a copy literally sitting around here. Dude, yeah, congrats and thanks for that. It's a mad lens to look at Bitcoin through because energy is energy and Bitcoin is energy. And that thread is there's a lot of finesse to it, but I thought it was a banger. So thanks, Matt.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you.
My pleasure.
And if you are listening and you made it all the way to the end of the episode, I want to thank you as well for tuning in and hope to see you again next week.
Thanks. See ya.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.